Thank you, everybody, for tuning into this episode of the podcast. And thank you to everyone who downloaded our most recent episode with Professor Pedro Sauer. We had thousands of downloads, which was completely unexpected and didn't see it coming, but we appreciate every one of you who've listened to it. This podcast is and will always be brought to you by The Fight Factory. Go to thefightfactory.com.au for all the latest in MMA and jiu-jitsu apparel. Our guest today is Ben Hodgkinson. Ben is the current director of Grappling Industries Australia. He's a 7-time Australian champion, 7-time Pan Pacific champion. He's an interesting guy. He's got interesting perspectives on the competition status in Australia. He's got some cool stories about his jiu-jitsu travels. So strap yourself in. I hope you enjoy.
Live.
A fair bit bigger than Aldo. I don't know, man. They're all good fights. That whole featherweight division is just full of killers.
Yeah.
Anyway, so you just got back from Sydney last weekend.
Yes.
Up at the Grappling Industries, which you're the Australian director for.
I am.
How did you manage to get involved in Grappling Industries?
Basically over a Skype call with David Aguzzi, who... Yep. Is the president of Grappling Industries. He runs them over in Canada.
Yep.
They've been going there for a while now, and they're starting to become really popular. One of the most popular competitions over in Canada. And a friend of his recommended that, you know, there's a big market for a jiu-jitsu comp like the one he runs over there. A friend of his from Australia said, you know, you should bring it to Australia. There's a few comps over here, but there's sort of been a monopoly here. Mm. With the AFBJJ and a couple of, like, not much other choice for guys to compete in. So he sort of took that advice and started looking for people to help him over here with all the stuff that he couldn't do, obviously, because he's based in Canada. And I got in touch with him because he was talking to Kit at first, Kit Dale, who I was training with at the time, and... one thing came up or something, and I think Kit was a bit busy at the time with his own career, and I think he was training, I'm not sure if that was when he was training for Meta Morris or if that was just afterwards, but he was very busy with his own career and wasn't so much interested in sort of organizing and promoting tournaments. So I got in touch with him through Kit because I'd chatted to David a little bit just on Facebook and such. And then one day David was just like, hey man, give me a call on Skype. I was like, all right. And then we chatted for a little bit and he was like, yeah, I need this and this and this and this. And like, you don't really need to know much. You'll sort of learn all that as you go along. I just need someone who's, you know, a smart guy and got the time and the contacts and knows a lot about the scene in Australia, which I did. I've been competing all over Australia and internationally for the last, you know, 5 or 6 years.
Yep.
So... and I work part-time and train full-time, so I had plenty of time to sort of write emails and make calls to venues and do all that sort of little bitch work on the ground over here.
All shitty stuff.
Yeah. So it ended up being sort of the perfect team. He had all the experience and the knowledge in running the competitions over there, and I've sort of started learning that and picked all that up over the course of the year. But, one thing led to another, and we started working together, and we've run eight competitions this year, and they've all turned a nice profit and all had great feedback. Everyone seems to enjoy them.
That's good. Yeah, I competed in the one in March, I think it was.
Yeah.
And I think the way, especially...
That would have been the first one?
Yeah, I think it was Melbourne's first one.
Yeah. That would have been the first one out of all of them.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Well, for something that just started, it was pretty well run. The what I like the most, especially someone like me who's just... only started competing in jiu-jitsu, is the format in
the round robin. Yeah.
What spurred that? Because it goes against the traditional sort of tournaments.
Yeah. I think the idea behind it is that I know one thing that a lot of people seem to complain about or seem to not like is that, you know, you can enter your first tournament, pay $100 or $150 sometimes for or whatever it is, and then losing your first match and that's it, done. Whereas I don't know, especially for white and blue belts and guys that sort of need that experience yeah. in competing, and that's why they're doing the competition. Like, why not give them as many fights as possible, which we try to do. So we've got the modified round robin sort of format. So we try and give everyone at least four fights if possible. Obviously, you know, we can't control if there's not enough people in the division, but we try and get everyone into relatively fair groups of five or six, or split the divisions up and stuff like that, or merge them where we have to, and get everyone a good amount of fights where they're going to get as much experience as possible. And I think it's better, like, not only for the newer guys that want the more experience, but I think it's better for even the more experienced grapplers who, like myself, it makes a lot more sense if it's a division of, you know, like three or four brown belts, or even a big division with like 10 people in it. You can have two guys on the same side of the bracket that they might be the best two in the division, but they fight first. Mm. And the guy who loses that first match might have come silver or third in the division overall, but he got knocked out in the first round just because of the way the draws came up. So I think it makes a lot more sense for everyone to fight everyone. You get a much better idea of who the most dominant person in that division is.
Mm. And not only is it good for people just starting to get that experience, but it's good for guys like you at your level who are competing on a more regular basis in the preparation, the competition preparation, especially if you have it before some of the bigger main tournaments.
I totally agree. I think one of the biggest things about competing is that competing is a totally different skill in itself. So it's not enough to just be good at jiu-jitsu. You've got to be good at competing, or not just be good enough at whatever sport you're doing. You got to performing on that level with all that pressure, and having the right mindset on the day is something that I myself haven't even mastered yet. I know personally that sometimes I'll go out and I'll compete really well and I'll be happy with how I fought, not so much even based on outcome. Sometimes I've lost, but I've known I fought well. But then other times where my mindset hasn't been right, or just something hasn't come together on the day, and I've fought badly. And I think you always know, and I think one of the only ways to really practice that and improve on that is just competing as much as you can. So I always try, whenever, even if it's just a small local competition, if I'm free, if I've got nothing else to do that weekend, then I'll always jump in.
In saying that, it's like me coming from the boxing background, you do your sparring and you do your rounds with a bunch of guys from other local gyms, and there's a completely different mentality that goes into fight day, in that some people who, they might punch the shit out of others in the ring, in the gym. As soon as you get in the ring in front of 500 people, it's time to shine. And a lot of people aren't game day fighters.
Yeah.
So that's definitely one thing that it helps improve on.
Yeah, absolutely. The same in jiu-jitsu. There's exactly. lots of guys who seem to really turn it up and compete really, really well. And some guys that, you know, might be absolute animals in the gym, and you train with them and you're like, holy shit, that dude's awesome. But then on the mat, when they step out to compete, just something doesn't click right, and they don't compete as well as they could. I kind of think I'm in that second category. I think I still, in the bigger competitions, I haven't had the best mindsets in the last few times I've done the big competitions. It's something that I've been working on, and I think that this year, hopefully, is going to come together for me. And I've been working a lot on my mentality and trying to fix the way I think coming up to a competition.
Yep.
And I think that's one of the biggest things. You know, all the guys that you see winning worlds and all that, they're just so focused, so confident coming up to the fight. And I think that's one of the biggest things that I hadn't really focused on coming up to that.
And it's a hard thing, because you can only do that when there are competitions around.
Yeah.
And that's where it's good that private entities, for lack of a better term, like you and David, come and creating your own tournament that's not run by the huge companies and the huge associations. And I think there needs to be a lot more of that.
Yeah. David wants to be a big company.
Yeah.
He wants to be the big corporation. But we obviously, I think it's important for organizations and tournaments and stuff to be profitable as well, because if you're not making money, you can't grow and like improve upon it. Like now, because it's been successful over here and because it's been successful in Canada, David's expanding into North America now. So he's running New York and Miami early next year, and Chicago a little bit after that as well. And I think he's got massive plans for USA if they all pan out and go well.
It's taken over.
So, yeah, it's important to be profitable and to make money from these things, but also it's important to give back a little bit. So we're always trying to find ways to make sure that it's something that the people competing in our competitions are getting at least their money's worth, if not more. So we're giving out prizes. We've got a whole bunch of sponsors on board, giving away rashies and geese and all that sort of stuff. We're trying to give everyone the most amount of matches we can for their money. Uploading all the fights. We film every single mat, upload everything. So we're always looking for ways that we can sort of give back to the people that are supporting us and supporting the sort of community as well. So
how do you think the competitors' mentality going into a round robin tournament in comparison to the traditional tournaments needs to change? Is there any difference in regards to preparation, training, or do you think it's just needed to approach it in the same way?
I think it should be a pretty similar approach. I mean, everyone's different. Everyone might have their own sort of way they approach competitions. Like I know a couple of people, they just like get really angry in their head at the person they're about to fight. They're like, pretend that the guy said something really rude about their sister or something, and just get in their head and just be like, yeah, fuck this guy, we're gonna smash him. The times I've fought really well, I've always just not so much been angry, but just been really focused, try and just be right in that moment, not sort of start thinking about what's going to happen next or who's the next fight. Just take it one fight at a time and just really focus on what's going to happen at that time, rather than looking to the next match or thinking about what I'm going to do on the podium. Or
yeah. Do you think there's room for both formats of competition?
Yeah, of course. I think single elimination tournaments bring something to the table, and some people seem to prefer that style. So I think it's better for everyone if they've got the choice. That's something I've been saying ever since we started doing this in Australia. I'm not looking to push anyone out or like take away from any of the other competition organizations that are running at the moment. There's some guys doing great work and running some awesome comps. We try and talk to the other promoters that we know as much as we can to make sure we don't conflict on dates and stuff like that. But yeah, we just want to offer something different. We have, I think, a very unique approach to running competitions. Like a lot of people have said to us that it's different to any sort of competition they've ever been to. The format, the setup and the way we've got it all set up. We don't have barricades at a lot of competitions. We sort of encourage people to get nice and close, just sit around the edge of the match and check it out.
And you've also experimented with submission only tournaments.
Yeah, we ran like three sets this year. So the first one, we just did Melbourne and Sydney just to sort of gauge people's response. Then the second one, because that went really well, we sold out, in fact, because at the start of the year we only had six mats, so we took in a bunch of people, and then it got so full that we had to go, all right, we should probably stop taking entries now, otherwise we're going to be fighting at like 8 o'clock at night. And then we got the schedule back, because we outsource the bracketing and the schedule to another company, so they sent the schedule to us and we were going to finish at like 8:30, 9 o'clock at night according to the schedule, and we were like, oh, people aren't going to like that. No. So we managed to scrape together some mats from some friends of ours and got an extra two rings happening, and we finished nice and early, which is another thing that people seem to be really happy about. Everyone's always commenting on how they've never been to a competition that runs earlier on time. So every single one we've done this year has been on schedule, if not ahead of schedule. And I've completely lost my train of thought of what we were talking about before.
Sub only?
Sub only, yeah. So the second set of comps was sub only, and that was actually the biggest turnout we've had. Melbourne and Sydney were both bigger than the ones before that. And yeah, people seem to really like that. So I think next year we're going to sort of alternate between sets. So the first set is going to be sub only, then the second set is going to be run on points. The third set will be sub only again. And then if we can fit a fourth set in, we'll do probably a fourth set with points. So,
do you think sub only is important? Because I hear a lot of interviews with Eddie Bravo where he thinks the secret to jiu-jitsu transcending to sort of the mainstream sport is sub-only tournaments. Do you agree with that at all?
Yes and no. Like, I think that it's the way the points are set up are sort of pretty good to encourage people to sort of control the whole fight. Obviously, there is room there for people to sort of just play the system a little bit, get a couple points, and then just stall for the entire time, which makes for incredibly boring jiu-jitsu.
Yeah.
But, you know, there's problems with every rule set.
That's right.
So, like, you can have a boring match with submission only as well, which we have seen before. It just depends. You know, I think exciting fighters will always be exciting fighters, no matter what rule set you put them on, and boring fighters will always be boring fighters no matter what rule set you use. So I think it's just personal preference. It's good to be both. It's all jiu-jitsu at the end of the day. So that's just another way we want to be different and give people something else to choose from. Like, I don't think there's any other submission only format competitions of that size or like going around Australia at the moment. I've seen a couple of small ones pop up around the place, but they're never like in a big venue like MSAC or with the amount of people that we bring.
What plans do you have for Grappling Industries in 2016? Is there anything changing it up? Or
we have so many different ideas, and like only about 10% of them come to fruition, but we're always, David's always just messaging me, and because of the time difference, it's usually at like 3 a.m. I just get like 7 messages in a row on Facebook and just wake up and be like, what? Like, free entry for black belts, okay? Just all this different stuff. Like, okay, we'll double the amount of prizes. Like, what? Okay, sure. But yeah, so we have a whole bunch of ideas that may or may not come about. One thing that we are changing in that first Melbourne tournament next year, which is already booked on March 13th, so I can tell you guys about that one because it's all locked in, and we are changing the venue for that one just because MSAC, although it's a really nice venue and it's really central, easy to get to, it's a great spot. One thing, it's very expensive, and the other thing is they have a lot of restrictions on the vendors and the sponsors that we can have. So something that we wanted to play around with was getting food and drinks vendors at the events. So someone selling acai or coffee or just something like that. Something that people can sort of snack on or check out during the day.
And so MSAC don't let you do that?
No, they have a lot of restrictions on that sort of stuff. No one selling food and drink because it takes away from their
bar,
their
cafeteria.
Yeah, the little cafe at the end there. But that's fine. That's their thing. And the other thing, they charge like more than we think the venue's worth. So we've got we're running the next one at Coburg Basketball Stadium.
Okay.
Which is a little bit further away, which is one reason we were hesitant to use that. But I think the benefits of using that, because it's like so much cheaper, so we're going to be able to give away more prizes. So that's the first thing that's going to change. We're going to give away at least a couple more. Either we're going to increase the amount of the prizes that we already have, or what I think we're going to do is we're actually going to maybe split a couple of the divisions. So at the moment, we give away prizes for the open weight divisions, which is awesome if you're a big dude, mm-hmm. but you know, it's a little bit harder for the little guys. So one thing that we might change is we might do a light and a heavy open weight.
Okay.
So just under and over 75 kilos, or we'll pick a middleweight or something like that. And do something like that just so it gives some of the smaller guys a chance. But yeah, I'll discuss that more with David, and we'll figure out what we're going to do. But having that, saving all that money on the venue allows us to put a lot more back into the actual competition and the competitors and all that sort of stuff.
Cool. Now, a couple of months ago, you headed over to New York. What was that for, the World Championships? What was that for?
So,
because you were training for a bit as well.
I was basically the point of going over there was to train for a month. I had some money saved up, and I had a month where I didn't have anything planned. There were no competitions for that month, and the Nogi Pan Ams were in New York at that time, and I had a couple of other friends over there at that time, and I was planning to go over there just before Nogi Pan Ams and stay until Nogi Worlds, but that didn't quite pan out because basically the only date that we could do one of the tournaments over here for Grappling Industries was the same weekend as Nogi Worlds, so I wasn't able to stay for Nogi Worlds. So my plan was just to go and compete in the Nogi Pan Ams, yep, and then just stay on for a month and train as hard as I could, get the most out of that, and then come back and run some competitions over here. But it didn't quite work out that way.
Whereabouts were you training when you were over there?
I trained around a little bit. So the first day I was there, I went to Unity with... Okay.
That's what, the Meows?
Is that Meow Brothers are there. Yep. Murilo Santana is the coach there.
Yep.
Awesome, awesome talent over there. Like, so many high-level guys, and they just train so hard.
Yeah.
Like, more than anything, there's plenty of gyms over there that have really good guys. But the thing that appealed to me most about Unity, I think, was just that they just get in there and they just go nuts.
Yeah.
Like, two or three times a day, they just train until they can't train anymore, and then they rest for an hour, and then they do it again. Which, you know, it's horrible at the time, but I think you get a lot out of that. And especially if you're only there for a month, why not get the most out of it?
That's it.
But yeah, for those who don't know, I got over there, and then the first day I was there, I came down with acute appendicitis and had to check myself into hospital. So... the first day I was there, I went to Unity, I rolled, everything was fine. I was a little bit jet lagged, my fitness wasn't great, but I had a bunch of rolls, had a good time training in Unity there, then wandered around New York for a little bit, then went home and was laying in bed watching a movie later that night and started getting a bit of stomach pain. And the Nogi Pan Ams was going to be that weekend, like 4 or 5 days later. So I was sort of thinking to myself, oh man, I hope I don't have food poisoning, or, you know, maybe it was the plain food, something like that. And then it started getting worse and worse. And for those that have ever had appendicitis, it starts sort of as a real vague stomach pain and then gets really specifically on that one, on the side where your appendix is located. So at the start, I was kind of like, oh man, I hope it's not food poisoning. And then I started to be like, oh fuck, I think it's my appendix. And I was like, man, I hope this is just food poisoning. And then by the morning, like, I didn't sleep at all that night. By the morning, it was so bad I couldn't even stand up straight. And I was still kind of in denial, like, no, I'm fine. Kind of worried about the healthcare system over there. Didn't want to have to go to hospital. And yeah, I was talking to my mom and she was like, go to hospital, you're going to die. You have to go to hospital. It doesn't matter. I don't care. So I ended up going to hospital in the end and checked myself in, and they did a scan, and they were like, yeah, it's appendicitis. We got to, you know, do surgery to remove it. And I was like, great. And then I was freaking out this whole time because all I was doing was just Googling like stories about people that had surgery over in America and had $50,000 hospital bills and stuff like that, because, I didn't have travel insurance either.
Oh, fuck.
Because I'm just smart like that. So I didn't have travel insurance, and I was, yeah, laying in hospital, like, high on painkillers, just freaking out about being in debt for the rest of my life. But in the end, I kept trying to ask people, and no one really knew. I was like, I'd ask the nurse, I'd be like, hey, you know, what happens? Because I don't have travel insurance. Like, how do I pay for this? What's going to happen? Are they going to send me a bill? Like, what's going to go down? He was like, oh, I don't know, I'm just a nurse. I was like, okay, can you send someone who does know? And then he'd send the doctor, and I'd ask the doctor the same thing. And then the doctor wouldn't know. And then I'd be like, okay, can you send someone who does know? So then eventually, like, I ended up talking to the accountant guy or some sort of money department from the hospital. And he was like, oh, no, we have this this thing in New York called Medicaid now, which should cover you. And I was like, oh, okay, that sounds promising, but still sort of skeptical of how it was all going to go down. And then he was like, oh, yeah, I'll send the council person to come and talk to you in the morning. And then I ended up speaking to this lady from this Medicaid thing, which is pretty much like their version of Medicare. And one of the very lucky stipulations in that is that if you're from a country which has free healthcare like Australia does, then you are covered for emergency procedures like having your appendix removed. So I dodged a massive bullet on that one.
Fuck yeah.
Well, it was pretty unlucky to come down with appendicitis in the first place, but it could have been a lot worse if hadn't been in New York and had been somewhere else.
Like Louisiana or something.
Yeah, yeah. I think anywhere else I would have been absolutely fucked. But it's kind of messed up because I think if a lot of people from New York had the same thing happen to them, then they would have had to pay for it.
Yeah.
But because I'm from Australia, it's all right. So, look, I wasn't questioning it. No, I wasn't going to mess around and so be like, no, this isn't right.
Is this before or after you'd had the operation?
This was like, they had to operate right away. Right, they were like, okay. Yeah, it's really inflamed. It's going to burst. Because I was kind of playing it down. Like, I got in there and they were like, on a scale of 1 to 10, how bad would you say the pain is? And I was like, oh, you know, it's like a 6 or something. And they'd be like, oh, okay. Then they did the CAT scan and then they got the results from that like a few hours later. And they're like, yeah, that's like really inflamed. Are you sure you don't want some like pain medicine? And I was like, okay, fine. Right. And then they shot me full of morphine and I was...
If you didn't twist my arm. I've had my appendix out and I know for a fact it's not a 6.
Yeah.
It's at least a 9.
Oh, yeah, it's horrible. I was trying to be tough, but yeah. When you did it, did they do the keyhole surgery? Or
no, when I did it, look. People listening can't see, but look how big my scar is.
Yeah, you got a big scar. Yeah. You got a cool scar.
Yeah, it is cool. I've convinced a few people have been stabbed.
I didn't get a cool scar. I've got like 3 tiny little, you know, kind of pussy scars. Like they stick like the camera in through one, the knife in through another one, and yank it out through the next one. So I've got 3 tiny little holes.
When I had mine, because it is such a big scar, I had an allergic reaction to, I think it was pethidine or something they were giving me. So I was throwing up the whole time, and every time I did, I was only in grade 4 or something at the time. So myself and like my mum, we had to push my stomach in every time I threw up so that my stitches wouldn't explode, and then I'd just have fucking guts coming out of my stomach. Oh, it was a nightmare.
Awesome.
Yeah, makes for good stories though on podcast 10 years later.
Yeah. But of course, because of that, I couldn't train for most of the time that I was over there. And yeah, but I got a nice little holiday in New York, and then I was able to do some stuff. I ended up signing up for 2 weeks at Marcelo Garcia's just because, my plan was to go to Unity in the first place, but I wouldn't have been able to handle the pace there just because they train so hard. So if I wasn't going to be able to keep up with the guys training there, then what was the point in sort of going there and just sort of having to sit out most of the time anyway? Whereas Marcelo Garcia's obviously just as high quality of jiu-jitsu, if not more so. But it's catered towards like serious competitors, but as well, there are a lot of like beginners there.
And yeah.
If you want to just sort of train lightly, it's a lot easier to do it there. And you can just sort of have a couple rolls with a few white and blue belts and then sit out the rest of the time. Whereas at Unity, it's more like train. Just like, you know, during the competition class, it's crazy, man. They like shut all the windows and they got a tiny, tiny little room.
Just locked down.
Yeah, it's one of the smallest gyms I've ever been to. And they shut all the windows. They turn the fans off. Murillo's like, oh, everybody leave your water bottles up the back. And then just they roll for about an hour. And the place is just like, not even like puddles of sweat. Just the whole, there's like about an inch of water on the floor. They can't even mop up the water at the end. They go around with a vacuum and just suck up all the water. Like,
did you roll with any of the meows?
Yeah, I rolled with the meows a bunch of times. I rolled with a lot of the top guys at Marcelo's as well. I rolled with Gianni Grippo a few times, with Mancha, with...
Is it Dylan Dennis? Is he?
Yeah, Dylan was injured most of the time that I was there. He wasn't rolling. He had I think it was a knee injury or something like that, so... Yep. He wasn't training while I was there, but a lot of the other top black belts over there that I got to train with, and yeah, just very happy to be able to have a go and roll with them and see what the talent's like over there. And obviously they're just as good as the hype is.
Yeah.
Like they're all phenomenal.
How do you think Melbourne's jiu-jitsu stacks up?
It's getting there. But I think it's still a step behind.
Yeah.
Like we have a lot of guys that are really starting to come along now and can hold their own.
Yep.
Internationally, which is something that I don't know if we've had before. Like we've got a few people doing well in world championships and Pan Ams, and one of the guys that I was over there training with, Levi, he's killing it at the moment, doing really well. I think he's still training at Unity at the moment. He's coming back soon. But yeah, he's doing really well. Craig Jones,
yep.
Who's training with me now at South Yarra as well. He's incredible. Just won Nogi Worlds. So
submitted everyone, didn't he?
Yeah, submitted every single person. I think his finals match lasted for about a minute. So
yeah.
There's some guys from Australia that are starting to do really well, but compared to America and Brazil, I think we're still a tiny bit behind.
Yep.
But, you know, all we can do is just keep building on the foundation that's already here. And I think in the next few years, the level of Australian jiu-jitsu is just going to keep going up and up and up.
Mm. Did you roll with Marcelo?
No, funny story. So I started training, and it was like one of the first days I'd started training at Marcelo's, and I was kind of like doing some stuff, and my plan was just to drill a little bit and then roll, and I rolled a couple people, but I sort of let them know at the start, you know, hey man, I just had surgery, like I can roll, but you know, just don't go too crazy.
Yeah.
And then Marcelo asked me to roll, and just as a reflex, I started saying the same thing. I was like, hey man, yeah, sure, we can roll, but I just had surgery. And he's like, oh no, it's okay, don't worry, you just rest then. I was like, oh fuck, I just shouldn't have said anything, man. Like, he wouldn't have gone crazy on me anyway, I'm sure. He's like, you watch him roll and he's just playing with dudes. Even the brown and black belts, he's just having his way with them. So he would have been smooth and technical and very fun to roll with, I'm sure, even if I hadn't said anything. But yeah, I blew my shot.
You had one job.
Yeah.
Did you end up competing?
No, I didn't get to compete at all while I was there.
No.
I did make a Facebook post saying that I won, just because I was in the grandstands bored watching everyone else fight and was decided to troll a bunch of people. No, I wasn't on any morphine at that stage. I was just bitter and felt like messing with people. So I made that, and it sort of gained a little bit more traction than I thought it would. And within,
because I caught wind that he won, because I remember Scott from the Fight Factory telling me that you had appendicitis. I was like, fuck, that's pretty good.
Yeah, I made a big post saying like, oh man, so happy to have won. You know, a few days ago I had my appendix removed, but I decided to throw a caution to the wind and just jump in and compete anyway, and I managed to win. And then like I sort of put my phone away, and then I looked at it a few hours later and it had like a couple hundred likes, and all these people had started sharing it and stuff. And I was kind of like, oh fuck. And then David was there with me, and he was like, fucking don't say anything, just go with it. And I was like, oh, okay. But then I made a post the next day saying, sorry guys, I was just messing with you. But no one seemed to see that one. They just saw the first one. So still people come up to me and be like, man, congratulations on Pan Ams and stuff. And I was like, oh, thanks. I didn't actually win, but thanks.
It had me going this whole time.
Yeah, sorry everyone. Sorry. Some people got angry at me as well. Some people thought it was very disrespectful and rude. So sorry if I offended you. To anyone that actually did win Pan Ams, I didn't mean to take away from your accomplishments.
Yeah, those people need to chill the fuck out.
Yeah.
Speaking of international talent, Australians doing well in the international scene, Lockie Giles has just headed over for EBI. You would have been training with him.
Yeah, I've been training with him ever since he took over the gym in South Yarra. It was, for anyone that doesn't know, it was Kits. Back in the day, Kit Dowell was training, was teaching there, and then he sort of had other things he wanted to do. So Absolute and Lockie took over the gym and started running it, and it's been doing awesome ever since. It's only gone up. I've been training with Lockie for about a year, or probably more than a year now.
Yep.
I'm sure he'll do well.
Yeah.
Like, it's one of those things, he's probably one of the underdogs of the competition. I think there's odds somewhere, and I think Lockie has the worst odds out of everyone, but that's kind of to be expected. You know, we're still far away. No one's ever heard of us. But, yeah, I think he's got a good chance of getting on there and surprising a few people, especially being someone that not many people would have been looking at too much. You know, no one... at that level, probably everyone's Googling everyone and seeing what their game is and trying to figure out how it's going to go. But it's not like he's someone that everyone's going to be worried about and be like going in like everyone's going to be looking at Gary Tonnen and being like, oh man, what's he going to do? How am I going to beat? Well, Eddie Cummings is out now.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Gary Tonnen took over for him.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. That's a huge relief for a lot of people. His leg lock game.
Yeah.
He's just making waves. Yeah, Gary Tonnen. He'd have to be the favorite, you'd think.
Yeah, I think so. He has the best odds.
Yeah.
Of winning it, I think, according to that thing I looked at. But yeah, I'm not sure who I'd rather fight. I'd probably rather fight Eddie Cummings than Gary Tonnen. Actually, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
It's a pretty shit choice to have to make, but I think Gary Tonnen's probably a tiny bit more well-rounded.
Yep. Yeah, Eddie Cummings sort of got that. He's like the one-trick pony almost, just with his leg lock game.
Yeah, but he's so good at it, and the rules sort of... I don't know. You sort of... There's no way to go around it, because, you know, he can just sort of sit there and you have to go into his legs at some point. But yeah, you know, there's always a way to beat someone. If I was going to have to fight him, I think I'd probably just try and stay away from his legs as long as possible, like stay out of his sort of 50-50 game and his leg locks while the time is on, like pretty much stall for the entire match and then go into the overtime, because I think he might not be as good
when you're putting like the
starting on the back and stuff like that. So, but I don't know.
What are your thoughts on that whole format, the Eddie Bravo tournament style? For people who don't know, from my knowledge, what happens is it's sub only, but if there's no winner, they each opponent starts in a favorable position. Like you can either pick the back or starting from an armbar setup or something like that.
They call it spiderweb, which is like a 10th planet thing, I think. But it's basically almost in an armbar. The guy on the bottom has their arms all locked up, and so they're in a good position to. Like, they're not totally screwed yet, but they're in a dangerous position. So you can start there or you can start on the back. So it's, you know, it's an interesting, like, it's just a different set of rules.
Yeah.
You know, you can get really, really exciting fights from that style of tournament, and you can also get really boring fights, especially because I think they have, I can't remember how long the first bit is. I think it's like 15 minutes, the sub-only bit.
Yep.
And then... like each overtime is like 3 or 4 minutes in itself. So if you have like, and it goes into like 2 or 3 things. So you go the 15 minutes, then you have like one person does their overtime for 3 minutes. And then if there's no sub, the next person does it for 3 minutes. And then they do that 2 or 3 times. So the match can end up going for like 25, 30 minutes all up. So it can drag on. And if it's like a boring fight, then you're sitting there like, kill me.
Yeah. And especially even though it is sub only, people... a lot of competitors would rather take a draw than going for the submission and risking losing.
Yeah.
That's what I found with Meta Morris. I think that's a bit of a flaw in that style.
Yeah, I think there's less sort of... or there's more motivation to sort of put it on the line and try and win with the EBR, because it's kind of like a tournament format. So to go on to the next round, you have to try and actually win it.
Yeah.
Whereas I think a lot of the Meta Morris fights, you're right, I totally agree... you get some really boring fights because, you know, guys would be worried about not losing as much as they were about winning.
Yeah.
So some of the matches there weren't so amazing. Yeah. But the Meta Morris rules, again, there were some, like, incredible matches from Meta Morris.
Early
like,
on, especially. I think the last Meta Morris was pretty shitty. I can't remember any real good fights. And I think the way they even filmed it, the setup, they got rid of the crowd.
Oh, that's right. It was just
in the back room somewhere.
Yeah, they're making some interesting decisions. There's some weird stuff going on with Metamoris at the moment. Lots of people not getting paid. They're doing all the Metamoris challenges and cancelling shows and not giving people refunds and stuff like that. Yeah. So,
and I haven't seen any The last one was a while ago, and I haven't seen any sort of any marketing for a new one. Whether they're even doing a new one or
when it started the year.
Yeah,
I think the last one.
Yeah, it was a while ago.
Yeah, I'm not sure either. I don't know how that's going, but yeah, at the start there were some great matches. Hodger and Bocchetta was one of the best matches I've ever seen.
Yeah, man.
Anywhere.
The way Hodger got out of that armbar.
Yeah, everyone thought he was done. I think, but
even some of the fights like Cron Gracie when he fought Ottavio Souza.
Yeah, that was a great match, and it was a great match in that sort of set of rules because.
Especially for Cron.
Yeah.
His style of fighting.
Yeah, like Cron was able to sort of eventually wear him down, which he wouldn't have been able to do in the sort of IBJJF style of rules. So, like, you can have amazing fights in any set of rules and you can have terrible fights in any set of rules. It comes down to the people doing the fight, yeah.
Hmm.
Do you think you... and or grappling industries would be interested in doing something like that, like a big showcase,
like a super fight kind of show,
like a bowl of Super 8.
Maybe like we have actually talked about it before, but not seriously. More like one of those crazy 3 a.m. text conversation ideas that I was talking about before, where we were like, wouldn't it be crazy if we could do this and we could get this guy and this guy and we could do this and. But yeah, I don't know. We don't have any plans to do that in the immediate future, but who knows?
It'd be cool having like a super fight per grappling industry. So like there's the normal tournaments going on, and then you can organize with some fighters to have like at the end or in the middle.
Yeah. Yeah, that's...
It could be. That's just
that's
an
another
idea.
Possibility. Just starting off with like one big match or something to try and get... or at the end or in the middle or somewhere, just a couple of super fights. While everyone's there watching. And there's a couple sort of tournaments in America that I think were doing similar sort of stuff.
Well, Abu Dhabi did that. They have the tournament going, and then they have some... They had...
they stop everything.
Who did they have? They had... well, Andre Galvao fought Cyborg.
Yeah.
And then they had Ricardo Laborio. He fought... Fuck, I can't remember who he fought. Anyway, but they had two. They had two super fights. But anyway. Yeah. Let's talk about Boa. Because you competed in Boa.
I did, yes, twice. I wasn't on the first one, then I was on the second one, and I was on the third one again.
And the second one, that was still at Malvern Town Hall?
Yes.
Yeah, I like that setup where they had the mats in the middle with like a grandstand or seating around it.
Yeah, it was a really cool atmosphere. I can see why they changed it. It's it was a little bit sort of, you could fall off the edge at any sort of moment, and it did happen a couple of times, especially if it's two guys that are... inclined to stay on their feet and wrestle.
Yeah.
Like we saw with, I think it was...
Satoshi?
No, it was Marcus Souza.
Oh, Marcus Souza. Yep, yep.
Well, he is Satoshi. They're both Satoshis.
Yeah, yeah.
Just the big Satoshi and the little Satoshi.
Yeah, yeah.
But him and who was it? Was it Bruno Alves?
Maybe.
I think they went off the stage there at one point.
Yeah.
But it was such a cool atmosphere while you were out there.
Which did you prefer as a fighter?
They were both cool. I think the first one in the Malvern Town Hall was I really enjoyed that a lot more. It was just different to anything I'd ever sort of experienced before. It was you felt just absolutely surrounded. Like everywhere you look, there's people sort of watching you. It's kind of like being in a coliseum or something.
Yeah, yeah.
On like a way smaller, cool. and safer scale.
And they have the drums when the people.
Yeah,
are
they
out.
Had the drummers. They had the break dancers halfway through come out and do some spinny stuff.
That was interesting.
Yeah, yeah. Those breakdancers are talented.
If they started training, fuck me.
What's your how did you prepare any different to those fights, or you sort of take it it's just as it comes, just another fight?
I think it's actually easier to prepare for something like that because you know who you're fighting, so you can not even so much prepare just for one person, but like I was talking about like mindsets before, and a big thing I think to have a good mindset on the day is leading up to the competition. You can't just have it on the day. It has to be like every day leading up for a couple of weeks or a month prior to that. You have to be sort of thinking about, you know, visualizing being on the podium and winning and all that sort of stuff. And I think it's easier to visualize how it's going to go down if you know who you're fighting and you can sort of put a face on it. But yeah, I quite enjoy that style of like not so much a tournament. It's more of a super fight sort of thing. So you just yeah, it was different to a competition. I enjoy that. I enjoy competing. It was I felt like a lot more nervous than I usually do for competitions before the first one, because it was something I'd never done before. So, yeah. And in that setting where it's just like people all around you and people you know, people you don't know, and just walking out there and all the lights are shining on you, I was quietly freaking out a little bit.
And it's different in that normal competitions, there's usually six mats. So there's a crowd around, but they're not all watching.
Yeah, they're not all looking at you. Yeah. You can be fighting boring and then they'll just look somewhere else.
And that's a huge mental factor.
Yeah.
Really. When you know everyone's watching, that's what you're saying now, that experience. Obviously, the more of them you do, the more used to them you get.
Yeah, the second one I felt a lot more calm.
Yeah.
A lot more confident.
Plus, it's only like that. It was on a theatre, wasn't it?
Yeah.
It's only just one thing.
Yeah.
One section raised of people and then not completely surrounded by it.
Yeah, it was a little bit different the second time, but it was still cool.
Yeah.
How
did you even get involved in jiu-jitsu? How did you start out? How old were you when you started? Or did you do any martial arts prior or anything like that?
Not really. I did, I think I did a tiny bit of taekwondo when I was like real young.
Yeah.
Just because I think my mum wanted to get rid of me for a couple hours a week, so she'd send me somewhere, but I don't think I really retained anything from that. Maybe some of this stuff, but I can't remember how to do it all. I did a little bit of Aikido when I was, I think like 11 or something like that. I did that for about 3 or 4 months before I realized it was all bullshit.
Yeah.
They had me going for a while.
Yeah.
Little 11-year-old me didn't know any better.
And
but
you watch those videos on YouTube where you see there's like 100...
It's so stupid, man.
But it's weird how some people will defend that to their grave.
Yeah, well, I guess if you've been doing that for like 10 years, you don't want to admit that 10 years has been a waste. Yeah. You don't want to come one day and just be like, oh, fuck, they were right.
Well, Rogan recently, have you seen that video?
Yeah, when he had some guy on.
It was fucking brutal.
And this guy...
Was, I actually did see that, yeah.
And this guy was talking about how it's the most effective when it comes to a moving force towards you. And then Rogan's like,
no, it's really not. It's just not.
It's like, all right, all right, bitch. We'll get a Div 1 wrestler come and he'll fucking drop you on your head. It's weird. It's like almost like they're brainwashed a little bit.
Yeah. Every martial art's a bit like that. To an extent.
Yeah, but when they start discrediting other martial arts that are clearly, and they're pretty much proven to be more effective. That's when you have a problem with people.
But there's people that'll just follow anything and buy into anything.
Yep.
Like, that's how you get cults and weird religions and stuff like that happening. But,
That's something that does happen, especially in the martial arts world. People are entranced by some of because some people are just so full of shit, and then they get to a certain position in a martial art where they can have control over a certain group of people who aren't, who aren't exposed to something like to jiu-jitsu, or they have no idea what it's involved.
Yeah,
that's where I don't know.
Well, I think it is very easy to like mislead people to like who don't know anything.
Yeah,
like at the start, like I've done privates with people or done talk classes to people where it's their first sort of lesson, and I'm showing them what I'm obviously trying to teach them the right thing and stuff, but there's been a couple of times where I've thought to myself, like, I could just teach them anything really at this point. I could just say, oh yeah, put your hands behind your head and just like do this, and they wouldn't know any better. They'd just do it. Like, if I sold it, then whatever, they won't know. But yeah, you know, some people need that, do it for different reasons, I guess. Some people do it because they want that ego boost. They want people to think they're tough, or they want whatever, but I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not just in martial arts, not just in jiu-jitsu.
That's right.
How'd I get started in jiu-jitsu?
Yeah, so you're doing Aikido, you realize that's they're full of shit.
Yeah, so that was really the only experience I had doing any sort of martial arts before jiu-jitsu. And then when I was like 14, I was living back in Perth at this point, and we had like a family friend who was older. He's like 25 or something, and I was about 13, 14. Yeah, 14 I would have been, and I wanted to do like some boxing or kickboxing, I think. Just being a teenager, I just wanted to hit stuff. And he was like, oh, there's kickboxing classes at the place where I do jiu-jitsu. I can take you along one time. Like, I'll take you if you do a jiu-jitsu class as well. I'll take you to a boxing class, but you have to do a jiu-jitsu class as well. And I was like, all right, fine. And then I did one of both, and I just found jiu-jitsu far, far, far more enjoyable.
Yeah.
And kind of stuck at it ever since then. And just, I think that guy stopped training a while ago, but I kept at it. And eventually I started doing it full time, started teaching classes back at my old gym where I started back in Perth. And then it just became a bigger and bigger part of my life. And now it's pretty much all I do.
Mm. It's not a bad life.
Yeah. I'm not complaining.
Yeah. Is this something you see yourself doing for the rest of your life? If all goes to plan?
Doing in some form or another, like, for sure. I don't know if there's a career in it or whatever. I'm not too big on planning ahead, but at the moment, my goals are just to sort of take it as far as I can with the competitive side, and maybe I never win worlds, or maybe I never do whatever, but I just want to compete at the best that I can possibly compete at, like fulfill whatever potential I may or may not have, and just not regret it in 20 years time, look back and go, man, I could have done this if I hadn't just stopped here, or done this instead, or whatever. So I'm just sort of trying to take it as far as I can, and at the same time build something really cool with this grappling industry stuff, and that's another thing that I have started looking at now, which wasn't really a huge priority to me before, which was building that into more of a career and more of a something to carry on and build on. But that's at the start of the year, I was kind of unsure how it'd all go, because I started working with David and I was like, yeah, I'm really interested in helping you do this, obviously, but my priority is still my career in competing and stuff like that. So I don't want to get locked into doing this if it's going to take away from this or stop me from being able to travel and compete and all that. But it's actually turned out to be the best thing that could have happened, because now I'm in a position where I can run these shows, make enough money to go and do competitions overseas and stuff like that, which I wouldn't have been able to do otherwise. Like, ever since I started taking jiu-jitsu more serious, I've kind of realized that to compete with the best guys in the world who are all over in America and Brazil and stuff, you kind of have to be over in that scene training with them.
Yeah.
So it's just, you can get better training over here, and you can reach that level. I think it's just easier if you surround yourself with people that are already at that level, and if you're training with the best, sooner or later you're going to become the best. So that's what been one of my goals for the last few years, is to find a way to get over there and do that. And grappling industries is sort of allowing me, like, already next year I've got planned in January, I'm going to the Europeans for about a week. Then I'm coming back, running a few shows, the first set of shows over here, and then I'm off to America for 2.5 months leading up to Worlds. Then I'll come back, do the second set here, and then if I'm able, I'll try and go over again, spend some more time over in America. So my goal from sort of next year onwards is to try and spend half the year in Australia and half the year in America, and try and get as much overseas training as I can, and then bring that and help train with all the guys over here and sort of bring that back and hopefully build or put that back into the Australian scene.
Where are you going to be living in New York? Are you going to go back to New York, or would you ever go to like Southern California?
Yeah, I haven't figured out exactly where I'm going. I've booked the tickets over to and from Cali, but
yeah.
Where I end up training over there is still a mystery. I'd had a great time in New York. The training's over there is really good. One thing about New York is the living expenses are really high, so renting an apartment and all that sort of stuff is way more expensive than it would be in California.
Yep.
Or something like that. San Diego would be really cool, training with the guys at Atos.
Oh, yeah.
Some beasts over there.
Kanan Cornelius.
And... yep, all those guys are absolute monsters, so that'd be amazing. I've done a training camp over at Lloyd Irvin's in Maryland before, a few years ago. Had a great time there. Thought the training was top-notch when I was there.
Yep.
So I'd consider going there again. Really anywhere, I think. Anywhere where they really take the competition side of jiu-jitsu seriously is somewhere where I'd be happy to train for the time that I'm over there.
Oh, awesome, man. Thanks for coming in.
Yeah, it was good.
It was good. Really appreciate it. Where can people find you? Another question I've got written down is, what's the deal with your Instagram name?
Sandbagging Creante. All right. So for those who don't already follow me, it's Sandbagging Creante. So Sandbagging and then Creante, one word, all lowercase. Sandbagging is a term within jiu-jitsu that people, I guess it's for guys that intentionally don't get graded so that they can win competitions.
Okay.
So if you're a purple belt and you should go up to a brown belt, but you go, no, I want to stay purple belt so I can win this competition at purple belt, then that's what sandbagging is. And then a Creante is someone that changes teams or like betrays their team and goes from one team to another. And I sort of use both to like take the piss out of myself in a way, I guess, because they're both words that sometimes or most times get used, I think, just by people that kind of just want to hate on other people that go, oh, this guy's beaten me in competition, he's sandbagging, or, you know, it's fine for a guy to leave another team and come join your team, but when he wants to go somewhere else for whatever reason, like there's good reasons and bad reasons to leave a team, but I think everyone has the freedom to choose. And some people just have that mentality of, no, he's a Creante now, fuck him. So I use it to take the piss out of myself and to take the piss out of other people that sort of use it in that way. But it's just a bit of a joke.
Yeah.
And some people seem to find it's funny. Well, most people seem to find it really funny. And then there's a couple of people that get grumpy at me and be like, oh man, that's very disrespectful, you can't say that, blah, blah, blah. But you know, whatever. You can't make everyone happy. But
you heard it, Sandbagging Creante on Instagram, Ben Hodgkinson, and that's Hodgkinson with a K on Facebook.
Yeah, don't get me confused with Daniel Hodgson. No relation there.
Different guys, different names.
Different guy, different podcast.
Oh man, thanks heaps for that.
No worries, guys. Had a great time.
See you later.
Bye.